Hello, Mzanzi. You are listening to Farmers Inside Track, proudly brought to you by Foodform Mzanzi. Officially, this is the world's best podcast for 2024, as awarded by WANEFRA, the global organization for the world's press. I am your host, Patricia Tembo. Welcome to episode 491. Today, we're unpacking a piece of legislation, the Meat Safety Act of 2000, relevant to livestock farmers producing for meat consumption. This episode is set to be both informative and practical as we welcome Jeremiah Jothams, who has extensive experience in abattoir management and meat inspection. Welcome, Jeremiah Jothams, to Farmers Inside Track. We are quite excited to have you. And for our listeners, Jeremiah Jothams has his expertise in abattoir management, which will be the point of focus for today's conversation. But Jeremiah, thank you so much for availing yourself for this interview. And if you'd like to add anything to your introduction, maybe a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please do so.
Thank you so much, Patricia. It's great to be on the platform once again. You pretty much have covered it, but yeah, I've just spent pretty much most of my adult life and basically just working within the abattoir framework, more so especially in the abattoir industry. Though the abattoir industry is quite diverse because you've got your red meat, your poultry, your crocodile, your game, your ostrich and stuff, and crocodile as well. But my main focus is just mainly beyond poultry, which covers your chickens, which is pretty much the biggest product in the poultry industry. And then some of the more niche products, which is your duck, rabbit, turkey, quail, guinea fowl and the like. But I pretty much dedicate most of my time that is in research and expertise in basically abattoirs management and all that. I believe I can say life has been kind to me to a point where we actually also own our own abattoir now, Carltonville. So we basically are putting into practice all the things that we have studied and pretty much all the knowledge and experience that we have acquired from other abattoirs where we were working in various positions in meat inspection, which is pretty much we're going to focus on today. The Meat Safety Act, pretty much the meat inspection of the products, various rules in management and so forth. But yeah, I'm quite glad that we are here and we have an opportunity just to unpack some of the issues relating to meat safety and the Meat Safety Act itself.
I'm quite looking forward to unpacking this topic, just given your extensive background as well. Why is it crucial for farmers, particularly those in rural areas who may resort to slaughtering animals themselves, as we know are cultural practices as well? Why is it important for them to be aware of and comply with the Meat Safety Act?
Just to unpack what we're talking about, which is basically the Meat Safety Act, OG of 2000, which is pretty much a piece of legislation which governs or covers the scope of application assignment of meat inspection services and service providers, and basically the powers of the national executive powers, which is pretty much just why the Meat Safety Act is in place, basically to try and promote the meat safety itself, and basically the national to setting in place the national standards for abattoirs in South Africa, and obviously the regulation of meat in terms of the import and export of meat within the country. So that's basically why the Meat Safety Act is in place, the reason for the legislation. So within that legislation, obviously, and there's various sections in there and parts of the regulations as well that pretty much form the framework of the legislation. So pretty much the reason why, especially in our rural communities, and mostly the farmers, why they ought to be aware and need to comply with the Meat Safety Act is that obviously in most cases, those that are involved in meat production, though being farmers, maybe they take their animals to the abattoirs or maybe some who do slaughter for themselves for various reasons, whether it's consumption, for religious practices or whatever the case might be. I believe they ought to be aware of the regulation or the act itself, because apart from it just being a legal document, which is obviously part of the legislation, I believe with every act or with every legislation, there's obviously consequences if you don't comply with it. So they ought to be aware what is permissible and what is not. For example, in this case, if you look, for example, at poultry, you are not allowed to slaughter more than 50 poultry within a month within your own capacity, whether it's at your household or whether it's within your community or various religious acts or the whatever the case is, you cannot exceed 50 units within a month. Otherwise, then now when the government look at the quantities that you'll be processing, and obviously if it is for human consumption, for whatever event or whatever the case is, it comes to a point whereby if then you go beyond those numbers, then they're basically looking at the meat hygiene or the hygiene aspects of your processing, especially where there isn't a meat inspector. So those are some of the things that they ought to be aware of, because in the event that then they don't comply with that, there's municipal inspectors, there's provincial inspectors, and then there's the state vets, which work at a national framework, the state vets. So any one of those are at liberty to be illegitimate at any given time. And if then they are made aware that there is slaughtering taking place illegally or within a framework which is not within the abattoir, then they can assess what the situation is, if maybe there is written consent from whether maybe it is the municipality or whether it's from a religious institution as to them being able to perform that act. If not, then obviously there's consequences. Either there's a fine in place, which is obviously the judge which will determine what the fine will be, or then if it's a first offense, then the jail time or the imprisonment cannot exceed a year. And if it's maybe for the second time, then it cannot exceed 2 years. So they definitely have to be aware of those things. So apart from the food safety aspect of the process which is being carried out, there is obviously legal repercussions if you do not comply. So I believe despite whether people are in a rural setup or maybe if it's just farmers, you know, within their farm holdings and stuff, why they ought to be aware that there is consequences to them not complying with the act.
Just to follow up on that, in the cases where a farmer loses livestock to disease or even old age, in that case, is the meat then considered to be fit for human consumption? I understand that with the Controlled Animal Diseases Act, diseases such as anthrax, it's important for farmers in that case to notify the state vet even before burial or discarding of the carcass of the animal. But if you can speak to animals dying from even just old age, maybe not disease, then if that falls under the Meat Safety Act as well and the responsibilities a farmer has surrounding that.
I'll just make reference in that to an abattoir. So if an animal comes to the abattoir and is already dead, we do not slaughter it at all. So either it's recorded as a dead on arrival, which is in immediate condemn, depending on what is the animal and what is the setup. But especially for us abattoirs, it's considered a condemn, and therefore it needs to be processed via the abattoir's waste management program. Or whatever they've outlined is how they get rid of their condemns. That's the processing procedure which it follows. But also even in a rural setup or on a farm, the whole point of slaughtering is that then you take out the blood out of the animal. So once the animal dies on its own, then the heart is not pumping and therefore the blood cannot come out. First of all, then that becomes an issue. So even if you follow various religious, I would say, beliefs, in some instances, if an animal has died on its own, whether diseased or not, then it ought not to be consumed. And even from a food safety point of view, the animal already, if it has got an excess amount of blood, then already the meat itself is contaminated, because if there is too much blood within the animal, then you are very much guaranteed that the shelf life is very, very small. So whether it's diseased or not, it still remains an animal or a product which is not suitable for human consumption, whether diseased or not.
How can a farmer obtain a license for slaughtering or processing meat, assuming that they have acquired the facilities to do so? What is the process to then obtaining licensing complies with the Meat Safety Act?
The only thing that the farmers can do is to bring the livestock to the abattoir, unless they themselves want to open an abattoir. But their license is only reserved for the abattoir, which is the license to operate the abattoir itself. I did try to just debunk or deviate a bit from the question and say, let's say in the event that maybe there is provisional slaughter, or what kind of license can somebody obtain from government? Let's say the controlled disease animals or whatever the case is. Let's say, for example, maybe there's an outbreak and Obviously, maybe various animals are not supposed to be moved to the next province, obviously, because of disease control. But maybe there's a situation that you need to slaughter a specific flock from another province in another province, and maybe there might be issues of disease control. Then they obtain a license from the state vet to say, okay, maybe I need to take this livestock, and then they come and inspect it, and then they see that there's no issues, and then they give it a license or a movement permit to be able to cross provincial lines to be slaughtered in another province if maybe they see that the animals that are being moved pose no risk. So whether it's for slaughtering purposes or maybe I'm moving them to a different farm and maybe there has been analysis that has been done that maybe there is nothing wrong with those animals, there you can obtain such kind of permission from the state vet. But when it comes to slaughtering itself, when they've acquired the facilities or maybe when they've identified there's an abattoir that does slaughter the kind of animal that they have, then all they need to do is just make an appointment with the abattoir and then get what we call a health declaration from their side. So the health declaration is just the farmer declaring that their animal has been inspected, whether maybe it's by a vet or maybe it's a small flock and maybe they have done everything they can, whether it's maybe taking care of the medication of the animals that they're treating and then they adhere to the withdrawal period and then they declare that on the health declaration. From the farmer side, the only thing that we require from them when they do go out to slaughter, which is not a license but a declaration, it will be the declaration of health from them to say, okay, their animals, if they've been medicated or they have anything that they have administered, which is maybe growth stimulants or growth hormones, whatever the case is, they've adhered to the withdrawal periods of that medication or those growth hormones or growth stimulants, whatever the case is. And then they do write what it is that they administered and what is the withdrawal period. And then they say from this day to this day, which then proves that they have adhered to the withdrawal period. And then that the health declaration becomes their assurance that, okay, the flock is fine. But then that obviously goes then to the hands of either the vet at the abattoir or a meat inspector at the abattoir at the antemortem inspection point, and then they evaluate that information and then they can give the green light to say, okay, these animals can be slaughtered or no, based on the information that they received, whether they are suspicious birds or suspicious livestock or there is something wrong with the livestock, then they can have the ability to say or reject or not to slaughter animals.
What are the key factors that you look for that is required from farmers who are supplying to the abattoir? What is their responsibilities with their livestock as they are supplying to an abattoir for slaughter? And as you mentioned, the declaration of health certificate and perhaps any other declarations need to be made, as you mentioned, hormones. But perhaps if you can just list the key points that farmers need to pay attention to when they are supplying to abattoirs.
We have touched on the most important one, which is the declaration of health or health declaration. So because also abattoirs are different categories, like we're saying, under 50 a month, then you can get permission to do that. But then just over 50, then that can be classified as a rural abattoir, as long as it slaughters just above 50 and then not more than 2,000. But then obviously there's grades depending on how big the facility is. And then the inspectors or government can come and assess and say, okay, this is considered a rural abattoir. It's for the community, especially like for those various events. Maybe it's a wedding or maybe a ritual or whatever the case is. Okay, you can slaughter about 50 a month, but maybe not exceeding 200 or 500, whatever the case is. So then that is classified as a rural abattoir. And then anything under 2,000 is considered a low throughput. So if you are sending your livestock to low throughput, you can get the health declaration on the day of slaughter. And then you can declare on the actual date of slaughter to say, okay, this is the state of my birds and they are a good flock, whatever the case is. But if you are supplying maybe, let's say, at a bigger facility, which is a high throughput, then your health declaration has to come 72 hours before you actually slaughtered the flock. So 72 hours before slaughter, then you send in your declaration of health. Then 72 hours later, then the livestock can come through. But some of the basic requirements to comply with, obviously, we are dealing with the Animal Protection Act 71 of 1962, and obviously the humane treatment of animals from the farm in transit up to the point when it gets to the abattoir. So whether it's from the catching and the loading, also feed requirements, like feed needs to be withdrawn like 9 to 12 hours before it comes to the abattoir. So before the livestock can come to the abattoir, at least the feed has to be withdrawn to avoid contamination. So at least within 9 to 12 hours, we know that at least the food has been already processed. And then it limits the contamination during processing, because then now if maybe you take your livestock straight from feeding the very morning, you just drive, let's say, less than an hour to the abattoir, obviously the food is still in the system. By the time they are processing it, then there's a lot of contamination, especially even if it's still under procedures and processes within the abattoir, which is hygienic. But the moment now you have a lot of feed within the system of the animal, it's easy to either rupture the intestines or whatever the case is, which we know is very much kind of bacteria. At the end of the day, then it can easily contaminate not only that particular livestock, but also other livestock, because then people are using the same utensils. So then now it forces then the abattoir to consistently change the utensils that they're using to slaughter every animal or every two animals, because the contamination is too high. So feed withdrawal is also an important aspect. And then also even the vehicles that are transporting the livestock to the abattoir, also there's regulation surrounding that. There's got to be shade above the animals. There has to be proper ventilation. The fumes, the smoke that comes out of the exhaust must be pointing down, not in such a manner that once the car is in transit, the exhaust fumes are going through and then it's affecting the animals during transit. And also even just the bed of the actual vehicle that is transporting the livestock has got to have drainage. So there's quite a number of compliance requirements when it comes to just basically coming with your livestock to supply the abattoir, or even if it's for your own consumption, but you're bringing it to the abattoir and then you take the product back. Those requirements need to be complied with, because they obviously affect the livestock itself. And in a way, it impacts the meat itself, whether it can be the color, the taste, whatever the case is. It has a certain percentage of impact, obviously, if those things are not adhered to. So that's why, obviously, like we have been discussing, the importance of awareness and compliance with the Meat Safety Act, because you can find that information within the Act. How long should you transport the animals? You can't transport the livestock for more than 4 hours. And obviously, once they get to the abattoir, how long before they are processed? So all those requirements need to be complied with. You are going to have a product that is definitely suitable for human consumption.
I understand that there's variation between abattoirs. For example, in a previous podcast episode, we did speak to someone who shared a bit about halal requirements. So it's important then for farmers to also understand that abattoir-specific requirements. Is that correct?
I know I've just been touching just religious aspect or this and that, but yeah, basically what you're talking about is specifically that. So the ad being that the government understands that we are multicultural in diverse society, there's different people. Some believe in indigenous, traditional or cultural beliefs. Some are Christian, some are Muslim, some are Jewish. So when it comes to abattoirs, also the Act makes provision of those kind of requirements from the religious institution as to how they want the animals slaughtered, but not in a way infringing on the basic principles of the slaughtering process. So I'll give you an example. If you're slaughtering halal, it's definitely got to be a Muslim guy that does the slaughtering, basically saying a prayer as they're slaughtering the livestock. And then there's a way that they slit the throat, they make the incision to allow for the bleeding, which is a bit different from also the Jewish way of doing it, which is kosher. Because with the Muslim, it can be any Muslim man, but then with the kosher, it's got to be a Jewish priest. It can't be just be any Jew. It's got to be a Jewish priest that actually does the slaughtering itself. And then the way they slit the throat is different from the way the Muslims do it, which is across the neck. With the kosher, it's actually the blade goes along the neck. And during the slaughtering process, the Muslim way of doing it, which is halal, it goes through the scalding, it goes through the de-feathering process, and then it's out. But then with the kosher, it doesn't go through scalding. It does go through de-feathering, but it doesn't go through scalding. So it means if it's a chicken, it doesn't go through the hot water. So it's basically after bleeding it, then it goes straight to de-feathering. And then after defeathering, they kind of immerse it in salt various times. So all those aspects, well, if you are maybe applying an abattoir or maybe there's different requirements there, you need to be aware. So let's say for argument's sake, you're a subsistence farmer, you have developed a market and you want to supply a butchery that does halal or does kosher, then you kind of have to be aware of those aspects. You can't then take your, let's say, your poultry to an abattoir that does halal, but then the guy that you're supplying wants kosher product or vice versa. And then also there's provision for those that want to go via a different route, maybe the indigenous traditional way of slaughtering, maybe it's for a specific ritual. There is provisions for that. So all that, there is provision for that within the act. It's just that the people that are bringing their livestock have to be aware of what is that will be done at the abattoir for them to be able then to receive the product in the way that is either with the halal, kosher, or maybe for indigenous ritual. It's just that the people that are bringing the livestock have to be aware, because obviously the abattoirs can tell you that, okay, we do slaughter halal, we do slaughter kosher, or we don't at all. So there you just need to be aware of that. Otherwise, maybe somebody says they want halal, you just go slaughter at an abattoir, which is not halal. And then by the time you get to the market, then the guy's like, okay, how can you verify or prove that this particular product has been slaughtered in an abattoir that is doing halal? So then obviously there's various certifications now that go beyond just what the abattoir is responsible for. The Islam religious institutions, they've got their own authorities and their bodies where if you want to be halal certified, then you go to them, you approach them, and then they can assign people that can come and perform the actual slitting of the throat. And then they also send in their inspectors to ensure that you're doing it correctly. And then they issue a certificate so that if anyone who slaughters that way, if they want to prove that the product that they're selling is halal, then they can produce the certificate from the abattoir. And whether a kosher or the rituals, there is really no certification that I know of. There might be, but I'm not aware of. So that's basically pretty much what is surrounding the different aspects of how we slaughter and accommodating the different religious beliefs and still maintaining the meat safety procedures and adhering to the Meat Safety Act.
Yeah, moving on to traceability and accountability. We know already that there's a huge problem with stock theft within the livestock industry in South Africa. So maybe if you could perhaps unpack a little bit on how the Meat Safety Act addresses traceability as well.
From our side, once the product comes to the abattoir, so let's say for argument's sake, let's say it's stolen livestock and then it's brought over to the abattoir. For sure, definitely the person has to then leave their details as far as even the farm where it's coming from, the registration of the vehicle, the name and the surname or whether ID and all those things from the person that is actually bringing the livestock to the abattoir. So let's say in the event that it so happens that it is identified that that meat which was slaughtered very way was a product which was stolen or a livestock which was stolen and stuff. From the abattoir side, we have documentation from the point where the livestock comes into the premises to the point where it leaves the actual abattoir as meat. So we can easily trace it back from the store or wherever it goes all the way to the person who has brought the livestock to us. So obviously, the Meat Safety Act doesn't really touch on traceability of the actual livestock, whether it was stolen or not, because the whole point surrounding the Meat Safety Act is when now you're just converting the livestock itself into meat. But we can trace it from wherever it has gone to as meat, whether it's a portion of meat, wherever store, whether local or international. We have all the documentation from the health declaration, which we spoke about, which is the first document and the first point of contact with the farmer. So from that document to the antemortem inspection, the inspectors on the ground or the vet that is at the antemortem inspection who is inspecting your livestock while holding your health declaration. So they are checking the state of the animals, are they in good health and what is the situation. And obviously, it has to go back to which farm it's coming from. Then they have to put the farm, either the location or the address, their cell phone numbers and all that. So from there, all the way into the processing from when it's slaughtered, when it's stunned, when it's bleeding, if it's red meat, if it's a cow or whatever the case is, and then they start taking off the hide, or whether it's chicken, the whole process of guarding, defeathering, all the way to cold storage. And once it gets into the freezers, chillers, and the point at which it leaves going to the client, all those processes within the process are documented. The temperature of the freezers, what time the temperature was, all those things are documented. So by the time the product maybe comes from a store, let's say for argument's sake, let's just use an example of, let's say, a Pick and Pay, wherever, a butchery. If there's an issue there, let's say a municipal inspector has gone to a store, a butchery, and then they found that the meat that is there is contaminated and the like, and then maybe the store says, we've just recently acquired this product from the abattoir yesterday or so, and our freezers are fine, so it couldn't have been our fault. So then it probably means that the stock that came from the abattoir was not safe for human consumption. So then obviously those inspectors take the product and bring it to the abattoir. So that is the process of traceability or recalling, which obviously every abattoir has to have a sort of like a hygiene management program in place, which just speaks to traceability and recall. And then from there, then they start assessing, was the product inspected when it left the actual premises? What was the vehicle? What was the registration? And how many stops did it have? And at what time did they deliver at a particular store? What was the temperature of the truck? All those things are documented all the way back to the date and time where the actual animal came to the abattoir. So that's basically traceability as far as abattoir are concerned, where the final product ends or client, the actual farmer that has brought the actual product to the abattoir. So that entire process is documented from our side. And then every 3 months, the provincial inspectors come and they audit us, our processes against that particular hygiene management system that the abattoir has in place, which obviously documents every process. So every 3 months, they audit that process and see that it's working. And then within there, there's actually an exercise called a mock recall. So what you definitely have to do within a period of a year is that you need to do your own mock recall. So let's say for argument's sake, within 12 months, I can send out a product to Patricia, wherever you're based, whether it's in Cape Town. And then for the sake of that exercise, we recall it back. And then we need to trace it back from your house or from your shop or from your store all the way back to our facility and all the way to the farmer that brought that actual product. If we are able to prove that we have documentation for that entire process that can speak to that particular piece of meat that you have acquired, then we can say our recall process is bulletproof or it's good enough. So they audit that. So they audit that mock recall, they audit the recall itself, the process, if it really works or not. And then obviously on a day-to-day basis, we document the process of processing the livestock into meat. So that's basically in terms of traceability and accountability from an abattoir perspective.
What are the legal consequences for individuals on violating Section 4 of the Meat Safety Act?
So obviously the business itself can be forced to shut down and then there is a fine. Obviously then the issue is taken to a court of law where a judge will determine a fine based on the gravity of the situation. Or if then a fine is not imposed, like I did say, if maybe it's a first-time offense, then the jail term should not exceed 12 months. But if it's a secondary offense, then it cannot exceed 24 months. So that's basically the legislation or consequences surrounding you contravening the Meat Safety Act.
Just to sum it all up, what would you say then are the main factors or key points to this conversation that we've had that farmers need to pay attention to, especially when supplying to the abattoirs? I know we spoke about slaughtering and we covered that really well in the first two questions. Perhaps farmers themselves who are supplying to abattoirs, key factors that would you as an abattoir manager, what would cause you to reject the livestock that is being brought in?
A lot of farmers, maybe some of the things that they are not aware, because some of our grievances with a lot of farmers always leads to when maybe we send them a letter or maybe a document which says that, okay, maybe X amount of livestock has been rejected or X amount of kilograms of meat have been condemned and therefore have been rejected and therefore they are either being charged to the farmer, because let's say if you are contracted to grow a particular livestock for the abattoir and you have a contract, then if maybe the livestock that you bring to us is not standard, then you are the one who's liable, and therefore we charge the farmer. So in most cases, what farmers don't understand, it's almost like the abattoir is trying to make a profit at the expense of the farmer. But coming back to the safety of the meat, if there's any indication of anything, whether it's a condition, a disease, if it is something that the inspector feels that it can actually impact the health of the consumer and it's not suitable for human consumption, they have the right, according to the Meat Safety Act, to condemn that particular product. Or if it's a meat examiner, they can suspend it and leave it for the meat inspector to do a secondary inspection. And if maybe the inspector is not very much aware or is still not too sure, then they can call the company veterinary or the on-call vet, if maybe it's a smaller facility that can employ a vet full-time. Then if they are not too sure of the situation, then they can then bring the state vet in to assess the situation. But the key factors, honestly, it goes back to animal health. So if then from the farmer side, if they cut corners in terms of how they take care of their livestock, maybe obviously cut on feed and maybe try to supplement with things that are obviously substandard and all that, you know, at the end of the day, it impacts the meat, because then if the livestock is for meat production, it always impacts the meat, and it's always the duty and responsibility of the abattoir and the meat inspectors on the floor in the abattoir to assess that, okay, despite the product now being on the floor, you have the final call to say, if anything happens, if we let go of this meat to the public and it impacts on their health, then we are directly liable as the abattoir. So that's why you see, let's say, if you look at various foodborne illnesses or cases that have been there in the past, whereby a facility ends up maybe releasing product and then it's found with listeria and they end up having to recall it and then the business shuts down and all that, it always goes back to the judgment of the abattoir and its structures to say, okay, if you allow this particular product, which is not suitable for human consumption, then you are held liable. But if then you do your job to the best of your ability and expect, then you have the right to condemn anything that is not suitable for human consumption. And it always goes back to the farmer to say, how did you rear your livestock from obviously inception to the point of leaving the farm to come to the abattoir? So if they definitely don't cut corners, they ensure that their biosecurity is intact and all that, then it's bound to be a product that leaves the abattoir suitable for human consumption.
Thank you so much to Jeremiah Jothams, who has extensive experience in abattoir management and meat inspection. For more information on this topic, you can visit www.foodformzanzi.co.za. And that brings us to the end of this episode. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. From me, Patricia Timbo, our technical producer, Megan van der Vent, and the rest of hashtag team Food for Mzanzi, thank you for listening.
Africa's dopest gathering for young farmers is back. Don't miss your chance to join the who's who's of agriculture, from top-tier experts to game-changing farmers, at the Mzanzi Young Farmers Indaba on 1 and 2 April 2025 in Pretoria. Early bird tickets are now available, so head to farmingindaba.com to get your full access pass for a discounted price. That's farmingindaba.com for early bird access to a full access pass. You don't want to miss out.